Greetings. I'm Bill Clyde, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Keith Murphy, who is an education and outreach associate with the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights. And Keith is here today to talk to us about employment and housing discrimination and how we can protect ourselves and what to do if we feel that we have been discriminated against. So, Keith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for coming. I know you're busy. I know that you're still, if anything, doing more trainings because you're doing them remotely.
Yes, we are. We're actually up and going with our virtual training and even public events.
Yeah. First of all, though, could you tell us a little bit about the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights?
Sure. The Maryland Commission on Civil Rights is the state agency that enforces several statutes. Title 20, which is the basic anti-discrimination, anti-harassment code for the state of Maryland. And that's in the area of housing, employment, public services, health services, as well as subcontracts with the state, or what we call commercial non-discrimination.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one. We also enforce Title 20, Title 19, and as well as I think it's Title 7 of the Health Code Act. So one of the newest things we've had as of October is that now any kind of health services are protected from discrimination in the state of Maryland. That's been added to our code.
Okay.
We are co-enforcers with the health department.
What does that mean?
It means they receive the complaint, but we have the ability to review the complaint. We can speak on behalf of the complainant if we don't think that's correct. The other thing is under the health department was there were only three protected classes from discrimination, and that was race, I think gender, and color.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of our protected classes come in. So not only is it so it's race and gender and color and ethnicity and sexual orientation and disability and gender identity and marital status. All of those starts, they all come in and are protected.
Wow.
And religion and all of those things that we as an agency are our protected classes under our healthcare services, they all fall into.
And so that's a
big difference. So if someone refuses service to someone or access to someone, because of the group that they're in, then it would be reported to the health department, and then we would look at it with the health department.
So in other words, if somebody yesterday had gone into a hospital and thought that they were discriminated against.
Mm-hmm. They were treated differently. For example, if you go into a doctor, going to a hospital, for example, and someone sees that you are dressed as, for example, in a hijab as Muslim, and a Muslim female, and they don't want to provide you service, or they say, I'm sorry, but we're really not, we're not equipped, or you're assuming that someone doesn't speak English, or we don't, are you push them to the end of the line and you only do certain racial grouping, certain religious grouping, that kind of thing. If you perceive that, because the fact is when it comes to discrimination, it's a perception on the first part. The person perceives that they are being discriminated against, and then they can bring the action. So we go from the person who feels aggrieved, who feels like they have been treated differently. And so we look at that, and we sometimes find that there wasn't, that really is not what happened. However, many times we do. So we will work with the health department on assessing that, the state health department, to assessing it and dealing with that.
How can someone find out more information about what to do in that circumstance?
Oh, I think the easiest is to go to our website. I mean, most of us are teleworking now. We're working from home virtually, like many, many state agencies are. So accessing our website is probably the best. You'll get a lot of information. You'll get information, and I'll just go ahead and share this, about trainings that may be coming up or public events that are open to the public and free. They will all be on our website because you can check all the categories. Look at education. You can look at intake. You can file a complaint. Our forms are online. So the way to do that is to go to mccr.gov Maryland, spell that out, mccr.maryland.gov, G-O-V.
Okay, wonderful. And then plenty of prompts there to send you to the place you want to go.
Right, and you can also still call our main line, and there are persons that do answer that line. And that number is 410-767-8600.
And outside of the area?
Is 1-800-637-6247. Correct.
Wonderful, wonderful. What's your position and work with the commission?
I am the Education and Outreach Associate. Actually, this is my 20th year as of January.
20 years, wow.
20 years of being, and I've enjoyed every minute. So what the part of the agency that I work with, because we have several units. We have intake, investigation, and litigation, and then I'm in the education and outreach unit, where we provide training for agencies, businesses, companies throughout the state of Maryland free of charge. We also do public education as well. We assist in the development of community organizations outside, for example, the central part of the state that may not have commissions. And so we work with them to make sure we access the entire state and have providing services to the entire state from Eastern Shore to Garrett County. And so a lot of that now is virtual. We used to be able to do a lot of outreach events and do in-person classes. But until, like, as you know, everyone knows, COVID kind of clears up, we're not going to be able to go back to doing that. We have found that it's easier to set up classes and do them online and more people can join. But I know as a teacher, I love teaching in person. So eventually we may do a mix of it. There'll be some virtual classes and then there'll be some in-person classes eventually, I think, when we get back.
Yeah, the school folks call it hybrid, right?
Right, more hybrid, and we're seeing more schools going back into session. It'll all depend on, actually, as the governor rules and everything like that. But still, COVID impacts us in such different ways. I mean, for education, it slowed us down for a while, but we're getting back up to speed. The other thing that it does, it also impacts the kind of complaints we get and how many we get.
Yeah, let's talk specifically about that in housing.
Right, in housing, even our numbers have gone down a little bit, and a part of it, and this is that, one, people are not out and about, and there were a lot of freezing of rents and things like that due to the COVID, especially early on. Yeah. Now, what I think could be happening or may start happening is that as those standards start to unfreeze, and we have questions like, what about people whose rents have been frozen or they haven't had to pay them, and all of a sudden they all have to pay them back at the same time? Where are they going to get the money for that? Especially if they've been, you know, they were out of work, their jobs were frozen, they were not going into work. If you're in the service industry, think about restaurants and hotels and stuff. I was at a restaurant the other day and they had one server for the entire restaurant during the day.
Wow.
So one is that you have people you're not hiring back. People aren't attending because in that restaurant there were three tables that were full in a very large restaurant. So people aren't going there. So we'll see people, how do they pay rent? Are there going to be evictions? Are there going to be, you know, loss of homes, mortgages lost, et cetera? So I think within the next cycle, within the next year, we may see numbers change. But they did go down initially for filing complaints. The one that probably went down more that I kind of see is really public accommodations or services.
Right.
And it may be also then at that point people may not be discriminating because they need customers. That may be another thing to play. But we did notice there were issues and instances of persons who were of Asian background that were treated differently because of the constant referral to COVID as the Chinese virus. And it just, I mean, people would do and say some stupid things.
Please give us an example of the kind of Asian Marylanders have been dealing with.
Well, I mean, people would say, I'm not going to serve you. You know, you're the one that brought it here. You brought COVID, you know, and you're talking to someone that's, for example, Korean or someone who's Japanese or someone who's Laotian and going like, that virus did not originate in our countries. And we've been in this country for 85 years. It is really that kind of like non-service. It might be people making comments at work, the harassment at work. So we're seeing some ethnic harassment up. We're also seeing Hispanic harassment up. So perceived Hispanic. I look at our hate crimes. They've been up about a 3% increase. And
probably that same kind of thing. You figure
69% were with ethnicity. So ethnicity, religion, and sexual orientation are our top categories.
What can somebody do about that?
And it's a part of perception as well. I think individually, it's really not to the Laotian to say, hey, I'm not Chinese. Because in reality, that's still deflecting the issue. The issue is that we had rumors and misinformation spread that it was, you know, that just because it comes from a country doesn't mean that it was intentionally spread here.
Right.
And using that kind of misinformation will spread hatred and therefore could be physical attacks on people and on their property and things like that, which become crimes, not just incidents, but crimes. So our hate crimes are different than our hate incidents. But each of those things, like the, when we look at even employment, what's really the highest for us is harassment and retaliation. And those are main complaints, more so than discrimination. So usually retaliation comes not always by itself. It comes with, like, oh, someone discriminated against me because of, and I filed a complaint, and now they retaliated. So our retaliation is the highest form under employment, followed by harassment, and then all of our other categories, followed by race and gender and disability, and now age. Age has increased under employment. Discrimination, and it could be a multiple reasons for that. It could be that people are perceiving their age as the reason why they were let go from their job during the COVID epidemic. It could have been a perception. All of those kind of things where people treated differently because of their age.
Keith, what should somebody do?
The best thing is just to give us because if you go to our website, you can file a complaint online. You can ask questions. You can always send a message. And you've got the phone number. I gave you the phone numbers. You can always call and ask a question. If no one's there, just leave a message. They call back. Those are the kind of ways to figure out. I always tell people, don't try to guess. Always talk to someone like in our intake office. If you call our line and get sent to the, and I would go to the intake unit. That's where you'd want to talk to somebody. They are the ones that do the assessment. That is probably the best way to go. There are times that, for example, we might not have coverage on certain things, but we might have referral. For example, our laws have changed about filing, so that if you're you think you're a victim of discrimination, you have to have 15 or more employees for you to fall under. Like, as a person, if you work for a company that has 15 or more employees, for you to be protected from harassment, I mean from discrimination. The law changed to say, if you only have one employee for harassment purposes only, if someone harasses you through your work based on one of our protected classes, you only have to have one employee.
Wow.
And the time to report it moves from 6 months to 2 years. So now you have up to 2 years to report.
That's great. Keith, unfortunately, though, we're about out of time.
Okay. Well, the one thing I want to share real quick in our housing especially is that we have a new protected class in housing, and that's income, source of income.
Okay.
So you cannot be discriminated based on a legal source of income. So a person, if you're going for a place to rent or purchase, they cannot discriminate against you if your source of income is legal. So it could be a job, it could be a federal or state grant, or a source from the federal or state government. It could be money from an inheritance, from child support, alimony. Any of those legal sources of money cannot be you cannot be discriminated against. So that's a real change in our law. We've been trying for that for years.
That's wonderful, and it's great that it is there, because a lot of folks have been disadvantaged and discriminated against because of it.
Right. We had a lot of that. That's what we hear a lot of. I can't get a place to live because I have a voucher.
Right. Unfortunately, though, that's all we have time for today. Could you give us that contact information one more time, please, for the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights?
Sure. It's the website is mccr.maryland.gov. The local number is 410-767-8600, and our toll-free number is 1-800-637-6247.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
For Living in Baltimore, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Keith Murky, who's Education and Outreach Associate with the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights. Thank you, Keith.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
Thank you.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.